How much money are we spending on homelessness? My computer needs to know. Can the council tell me? Or is it hidden in that great big heaping stinking pile of Seattle spirit over there in the corner?
The city is firmly behind solutions, and I think if they see solutions working, they're going to support us in the solutions.
I'm just once again reading Jason's piece. He broke the news this morning that the city council has actually no idea how much money they're spending to help create further homelessness problems by inviting heroin addicts and other people to live here and to steal services from families who found themselves homeless and then need those services. So it's a competition between the street people and the people who actually want help. And Seattle has no idea how much they're actually spending on this. Now, that's the local stuff. And Rants is all over this. You can text the word Rants, R-A-N-T-Z, to read Jason's piece. And it really is good. This is the fourth or fifth exclusive the guy's gotten. And it's good news for conservative radio that we have someone doing that. It's great work. Now, I-1639. Kim Wyman, the Secretary of State, is going to join us at 3:30 to give us an update on where she's at. So the signatures are in, and here's where we stand. Here's where I see this. The initiative is blatantly illegal. It's illegal on a constitutional front, okay? It does not contain the clear language that is required by the state constitution. Article 2, Section 37, says that an act that is revised or amended shall be set forth at full length. Fails to do that, okay? Secondly, RCW, I don't want to read this on the air because it's so boring, but it's 29A.72.100 for your information, must have a full, true, correct, readable copy of the proposed measure printed on the reverse side of the petition. 1639 doesn't meet either of those qualifications. Here's where I think Kim should go with this, okay? And she's going to join us at 3:30. She should sue her on her own. And say the Seattle Supreme Court that operates out of Olympia has attempted to constrain me into following only one statute when another applies. Plus, my constitutional duty is to uphold the Constitution. The Constitution is very clear on what an initiative must contain. Go back to the court. Put it back over to the court. Make the court tell Kim to ignore the state constitution. Make the court tell Kim to ignore RCW 29A.72.100. Make them do that because it sets up then a much bigger suit. And let's be clear. The cards are all lined up on this. The media, the way the media is reporting upon this initiative, here's Como News.
In an effort to get those weapons out of the hands of those under 21, Initiative 16.
Let's start with this. It doesn't do anything to get the weapons out of their hands. Okay, Como, nothing. It doesn't go take the guns from people who are under 21 and have it. So that's fake news charge number one, Como.
39 was drawn up. It would raise the age to buy semi-automatic rifles to 21, require enhanced background checks, and impose safe storage standards for guns.
Safe schools and safe communities.
Campaign chair Stephen Paolini and supporters had only a month to get the required 260,000 signatures. Today, the first batch of those signatures arrived in boxes at the Secretary of State's election offices in Olympia.
They had only a month, but they had $4 million by people who are guarded by armed security. Okay, so there's another bit of context to this. Now, I want to get to what's actually in this initiative. Because we have a red alert. I would love it if you would get in touch with Kim just before she comes on the show, Kim Wyman. I'll make it easy. Text the word Kim, K-I-M, to 800-465-8770. Do that now. You'll get her phone number, and you'll get a note on what RCW to quote with her. And just tell her politely and firmly what you expect her to do. And then I want to get to how the media is misdescribing this initiative, because this is how it's going to be sold throughout the state. If it makes it on the ballot, you'll never hear what I'm about to tell you about this initiative. Now, King 5. This is how King 5's reporting on 1639.
Local high school students and gun safety advocates here in Washington State are rallying around a new initiative that would increase the age to purchase semi-automatic rifles to 21, as well as require enhanced background checks and safe storage standards.
Okay, so same three talking points. Raise the age to 21, which is a problem on a federal level. The Bill of Rights does not have an age limit to 21. We can't take away people's free speech rights, right? It's very questionable that we can do this with the right to purchase a weapon. But what's more problematic about this is the fact that the media does not want to go into detail about what's in this initiative. Forget the fact that it's been illegally filed. Well, it's not been illegally filed, but forget the fact that it violates the Constitution and it violates at least one statute of the law. Forget that. That is the fact that they didn't put the actual language of the initiative on the petitions that people signed. Here's the real problem with this. It's what's in it. If this thing passes, you're going to be morally obligated to ignore it. And I mean morally obligated. So what's in this? First of all, it sets up a bunch of things that don't exist now. Now, this is not single topic, and yes, there'll be a lawsuit based upon that for sure. The bill requires a mandatory firearm safety program. All right, who decides what that is? The government. Who decides who's approved to teach it? The government. Who decides how long it takes to get into that? The government. Is that described in the initiative? No, they just say it has to be set up. It will also record the make and number of the gun. Now, be clear on something here. If months ago, if 4 weeks ago, you told me that you came to me and said the UN, they're pushing to have a full global gun registration program, this is going to be part of that, I'd say, come on, let's not do conspiracy stuff. But as I'm looking at this, it sets up at least two databases. That's the first one. The other thing it does is it absolutely goes beyond the single topic subject. It creates new fees. It creates a new waiting period. It mandates, and this is they talk about, the safe gun storage. It doesn't describe it. It says you have to have it in a safe, or you have to have it in a lockbox, or you have to have a trigger guard, but they don't say when. Now, I don't know about you. The firearm I keep by my bed, and the second one, if things get really bad, I've got the secondary location. They're not going to have trigger locks on it. They're not going to be in a safe, and nor are yours. It mandates this as well, that if you ask for permission to own a weapon in our state, ask for permission, they take away your healthcare privacy rights. You literally waive your HIPAA rights. It empowers law enforcement once a year or so to check up on you. Just pop in, make sure you're doing okay. Feeling okay? That's after they strip you of your rights. So let's say that you're going through a tough time. Let's say that maybe you and your wife are having problems and you're in therapy. Or let's say maybe you're in therapy and it doesn't work and you and your wife decide to get divorced. Your wife could say, you know what, I'm concerned about my husband's state of mind. There's already an initiative for that. Now, if she didn't do that, an activist sheriff or an activist law enforcement agency can come along and go, you know what, we're going to go ahead and not let you own those weapons because we're concerned that you're in this counseling. And remember, you waived your HIPAA rights. Your therapist has to say, yeah, here's what we talk about. It changes new definitions for firearms. And if you are under the age of 21, you don't get to carry your gun with you anymore. Now, the media will never tell you these things, but here's also what's at risk. It's not just the poison that's in this. Nothing in here will prevent crime. It is the fact that if this is allowed to go on the ballot, the law that says you have to actually put the language of the thing you're signing on the thing, that law becomes meaningless. If you want to get in touch with Kim, she's going to be with us in about 15 minutes. Kim Wyman, the Secretary of State, text the word Kim, K-I-M, to 800-465-8770. She'll be kind enough to join us at 3:30 today, give us an update on where she's at. We'll get into the national breaking news when we come back, then 3:30, Kim Wyman. A lot of requests for this today. It's Bump Up Music by Request on the Todd Herman Show on Friday. Presented some themes. Talking a lot about lawlessness and how is it that we should follow the laws if the government refuses to follow the laws. In fact, I finally had a representative engage me on Twitter on this. He's going to join us next week. talk about the question, why should we follow the laws when the government doesn't? Coming up about 9 minutes, Secretary of State Kim Wyman, an update on I-1639, the illegally presented anti-Second Amendment, anti-self-defense initiative. We'll go out and check news on a national basis.
As we speak. The Todd Herman Show is live and local because the power seekers never rest. And political news is breaking as we speak.
So the left continues to press the panic button on the Supreme Court. We got that. Remember that weirdo, Richard Painter, used to be an ethics lawyer for George W. Bush. Now he's a radical leftist. And remember he did the dumpster commercial where he speaks like a robot? It's the most bizarre thing. This guy is inhuman. He's the one who wants an investigation into Justice Kennedy retiring because no 81-year-old man ever wants to retire. The president gave a great statement on his prime responsibility as it relates to his office. He's called it his greatest responsibility. We'll talk about that and some just a more ridiculous sort of Trump derangement syndrome stuff. Let's start with this because it's fun. This is this Richard Painter running for the Senate in Minnesota, back to the dumpster. Listen to this guy talk.
Washington, D.C. is a dumpster fire, so we need to put it out. A lot of water all over that dumpster. That's what we're going to do in this primary and in November.
Now, last time it was highly produced and they stood in front of a stupid, terrible, terrible green screen of a dumpster. But now it has no production value and he still can't be human. And his big running point now is certainly no man who's 81 can ever want to retire. I demand an investigation into Justice Kennedy retiring. Converse to that, the president spoke about his greatest responsibility.
My greatest responsibility is to select a justice who will faithfully interpret the Constitution as written.
That's a plain fact. And why is it the greatest responsibility? You could say it's the national defense. Well, sure, that is a prime responsibility of the president. Why is that the greatest responsibility? Because it's the longest lasting. Because long after the president has retired, long after he's no longer the president, the justices remain. And it was set up that way. Why? Because the law should be predictable. It shouldn't vary with people's moods. It shouldn't go back and forth. Our founders were so brilliant, and I regard them as inspired. I really do. Inspired by the Lord. In the way they set up this system. They studied gubernatorial governmental systems from around the world. They studied the philosophers. There's a reason they came up with this. Some of them studied some of the Indian tribes and the Federation of Tribes. They took all that into account. They came up with the Congress every 2 years, right? So those people are in and out, was supposed to be. Well, they're not anymore. They can change very quickly. Congress could turn over very quickly. The mood of the American people is reflected in Congress. The Senate, a more deliberative body, there for a longer period of time. So providing a bit of a calming influence. You, of course, know the hot tea in the cup and then the saucer where it can cool. You know that metaphor. Then the Supreme Court. Supreme Court there to make sure that the words of the Constitution of the United States are faithfully interpreted. There is no way to interpret away the fact that the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution gives the people the right to keep and bear arms. It says it right there. There is a pretense on the left that that single amendment, that that's the only amendment that the founders chose to give the government more power. It is a ridiculous argument. And that's why the left is so insanely furious that Trump is talking about originalists. If you speak to originalism, you speak to small government. That's why they're freaked out. Because if he replaces Kennedy with an originalist, and for God forbid it be someone who goes after Roberts in that mode, God forbid, then President Trump will have been worth everything, in my judgment. Now, the media, they'll continue to panic. Now, there's a new reason that the president shouldn't be allowed to do any of this. From MSNBC, the anchor Ali Velshi.
This president should not, being under investigation, even be in a position to nominate a judge at all.
Hey, good long-term thinking. Well, no, it's not. When you govern by immediate emotional response, you end up with foolishness like that. Ali Velshi, what that would mean if that was the precedent, if a president's under investigation, they should not be able to nominate a Supreme Court justice. What does that mean? It means if there's an opposition party in control, every president will enter office under investigation on day one. Everyone. You cannot govern a country based upon immediate feeling. Hell, the biggest mistakes I've made as a parent, and they're vast and many, have been that I have responded to immediate need or immediate feeling without thinking of long-term consequences. Not in regard our government as our parents at all, but there's a fact. Thinking long-term creates long-term stability. Giving into emotion, it doesn't. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. Kim Wyman reached out. Well, actually, I reached out to Kim. But she responded right away. She's coming on to give us an update on I-1639, the illegally presented anti-Second Amendment, anti-self-defense initiative that is a multiple set of topics, at least 22 of them. Now, she's in a position that the Supreme Court purposely put her in to make this political. We'll talk to Kim next on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. Bumper music by request on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. You got a song you want to hear? Hit us up on Twitter, at Toddy Herman, but tell us why. We're looking for themes today. Joining us now on the telephone, Secretary of State of Washington State, Kim Wyman, back on the Todd Herman Show. Kim, thanks again for coming back on.
Well, Todd, thanks for having me on.
I'm going to guess you've heard from some of my listeners.
I think one or two, yes, we have.
Look, I have great admiration for politicians and office holders who have tough conversations. There's going to be days where you and I disagree, and I'm hoping that's not today. I want to get an update from you on where your office stands in regard to this initiative that did not have, and I think that you and I are in agreement, that the petition, the words of the initiatives just absolutely do not appear on the back of the initiative, right? We agree on that. Is that correct?
I've never seen an initiative submitted to the state, and we went back and looked at initiative petitions that have been submitted to the state. We've never seen one with this format. Literally, they included word for word everything they submitted when they first turned in their initiative, a few months ago. All of the words are there, but it's the way and the manner with which they presented them that's different.
Yeah, the strikeouts are gone. The underlines are gone. In other words, the amendments that have been made to it do not appear. And the law is pretty clear on this. At least the Constitution is very clear on this, that if an act is revised or amended, it shall be set forth at full length from Article 2, Section 37 of the Washington State Constitution. And then RCW 29A.72.100 calls for petitions to have a, quote, full readable true and correct copy of the proposed measure printed on the reverse side of the petition. The underlines are gone. The strike-throughs are gone. In other words, the words on the back of the petition are not the actual words in the initiative. Isn't that correct?
The words are there. It's the way they're presented that could be confusing to some, because you do not have the strike-through, which is normally what in a bill, for example, that's presented to the legislature, you would be showing the what is being taken out of the existing statute, and underline would be the words that you are adding to existing statute. And the detail on the back of this initiative petition that we've received does not include the strike-through or the underline language.
Well, we're in agreement on that. And then secondly, Kim, and then I want to get into where your office is at, and Kim Wyman's with us, our Secretary of State. Just been great on this. You know, I got to tell you, Kim, I get tears in my eyes when an office holder is willing to have these tough conversations, because a lot of folks run away from them, Kim. And and I got to tell you, I value you willing to have this conversation. So the other issue with this is it says full and readable. I have seen this initiative. I've seen the language. And in order for the folks who filed this lawsuit to be able to see if the underlines were there, they had to use a magnifying glass. I mean, we got to admit the text on this is absurdly small, is the way I see it.
That is what, you know, our takeaway as well. I would say this is probably a 6-point font on the back of the initiative pages.
Yeah. I think the Supreme Court has done a nasty thing here. I think that they have taken one RCW, that's the 29A.72.170, and tried to constrain you as a statewide office holder, when in fact, as you've said, you have a duty to the Constitution and there's this other RCW out there. So where do you guys stand on this initiative, and how are you going to respond to it?
Well, you know, first, I think serious concerns have been raised not only by my staff and myself in the office, but certainly by many Washingtonians that have contacted our office about the backside of these initiative petition sheets. And many people have pointed out RCW 29A 72.100, which is very specific on what that they have to be readable, full and true correct copy of the proposed measure. The piece that's really significant, though, is that in RCW 72-170, that the legislature hasn't given me the authority to actually consider the petition paper size and contents, this part of 100 that's listed in the statute. They have specifically omitted that from what I can reject or accept a petition on. In fact, they went so far as to not only specify what I could reject on, which is that it doesn't contain the proper oath, that it doesn't have enough signatures, or it isn't submitted in a timely manner. And then they end it, and this is really the significant part in the statute, is that if none of the grounds for refusal exist, the Secretary of State must accept and file this petition. And the legislative intent, you know, when we've talked very extensively to our legal team, not only in the context of the statute, but we've looked at case law and we've looked extensively at the Constitution, the legislative authority that my office would have to reject this clearly is not there. The legislature is very clear that I do not have the authority to reject these petitions because they didn't meet the requirements in the 100 section of the RCW.
So let me make this suggestion to you, because I understand what you're saying, that your lawyers are saying that the legislature doesn't grant you that authority. And that's, the legislature is our lawmaking body. As angry as that makes me, and it does, it makes me furious, because you are a state election officer. Let me make this suggestion to you. And I'm a rodeo clown with a radio show, but I've talked to a lot of attorneys on this, Secretary Wyman. Look, I think that you need to go back to the Supreme Court, and there is a constitutional issue here, and it's huge, Kim. I mean, this is so huge. Our state constitution, you took a pledge to that. I know you, and I know you to be a woman of good soul, of good heart. I know you take your pledge very seriously. Our state constitution is the preeminent law of our state. It is superior to any and all statutes in our state, any and all. And it states very clearly that an amended act or a revised act in a bill or in a in an initiative must be or shall be set forth at full length. It's not there. It does not exist. I beg you to go to your attorneys and file a suit to get this authority, to have this authority clarified, to go to the state Supreme Court and say, I am not prepared to violate my oath to the state constitution. This initiative does not match what the Constitution says. I need to know if you're going to order me to violate my oath to the Constitution.
Yes, and the conversation, the points you just made has been part of the conversation we've been having for a number of days on this issue. And, you know, I take a step back and I took an oath to uphold the Constitution, and I take that seriously. And remember, part of my responsibility is the overall initiative process. And my understanding is that the opponents of this measure have, because we have accepted the petitions, are planning to go to the court for injunctive relief, because I lack the discretion to be able to do that in state statute. And so I welcome that clarity that the court could provide. And that's really what we're looking for. I'm also, you know, my concerns too is the long-term implications of being able to submit an initiative petition with, you know, two-point font. The implications of this, the court needs to clarify on a constitutional basis. And with the, what are the long-term, why am I blanking on the word, the
precedent. The precedent.
Why am I blanking on the word? Anyway, implication. That it has.
Kim, let me ask you this. Tough question for you. Okay. Do you feel that if you accept these initiatives, which fail the statutory test of RCW 72.100 or 29A.72.100, they fail that. We agree on that. It fails the Article 2, Section 37 of the Washington State Constitution, which is the premier law of our land that is superior to all of the statutes. It is in violation of that. Do you feel that you are being forced to violate your oath to the Washington State Constitution by accepting initiatives that do not meet those qualifications?
So, reading Article 2, it says that the legislative powers we're vested are in the people to have not only the ability to propose laws independent of the legislature, but that they have that constitutionally guaranteed right. And initiative is the first power that's reserved by the people. And this is the line that I keep really going back to, is every such petition shall include the full text of the measure so proposed. And that's where I really do believe that I don't have the constitutional authority to make the judgment call of whether it meets that constitutional standard. And that remember, I'm an executive branch administrator. My job is to oversee the entire initiative process. And the court's role is to determine whether the initiative sponsors and the 370,000 people that signed this petition, if their constitutional rights were upheld or not, and the voters, certainly the 4.2 million voters in our state, if their constitutional rights were upheld in this process. And so, you know, I don't want to overstep my constitutional authority as the Secretary of State either. And really, the court's role is to determine constitutionality of measures. And, you know, my attorney certainly would be very nervous hearing what I'm saying right now, because they don't want me to overstep my constitutional authority of interpreting what Article 2 says. And so that's the line I've got to walk, is I have to protect the initiative process, because every voter in the state has a right to the initiative process and to weigh in at the polls or sign a petition. And so how do I balance those two things out? Goes back to RCW and the authority that the legislature gives to me as Secretary of State to do the ministerial duties that I have to accept those petitions, validate those signatures, and make sure they have enough to qualify for the ballot.
And, you know, I appreciate the fullness and the thoughtfulness of your answer. And I'd ask you to pause and pray. Okay. And I know that's a very serious thing to ask you to do. We don't know each other well. I've met you a few times. I'd ask you to pause and pray on something. This is this is a fact. The state Supreme Court is an activist body. Now, I don't think you can be in the air agreeing to that. They pretended a law was too old in the Hearst decision. Well, they don't get to do that, but they chose to do it. With the charter schools, they pretended it was funded in a way that it was no longer funded. In this case, they've gone to one RCW, and here's that I think is a very clear case. If this was not about gun control, if this is about something that was ideologically adverse to the left, they would use the same RCWs, or maybe a different one, or the constitutional authority to strike it down. For instance, if this was a Nyman initiative, it'd be gone. State Supreme Court had already done away with it. I'd ask you to pray about going to the court, even if as an amicus brief, to say, look, as a friend of the court, I need to understand something. This initiative is unconstitutional and violates at least this RCW. Are we really going to accept this and make the court respond to the second RCW, the one they ignored, and the constitutional issue, at least on precedent, Kim? Because for the future of our state, if this passes, if they let this in, I promise you, I'm going to raise $1 million. I'm going to file an initiative. On the back of it, I'm going to put the text of the book, The Cat in the Hat, because we've reached that sort of level of absurdity. So I would like, would you just at least pray about those issues before you make a decision?
Todd, believe me, I've been doing a lot of all of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the measures I have, you kind of hit on it, for doing my job is always making sure I'm not letting any of my own personal political perspectives or anyone else's political perspectives, you know, affect or color my decision making. And, you know, when I first took office in 2015, Tim Iman had an initiative 1366, which was the two-thirds tax initiative. And, you know, we use the same benchmarks as we're using now, is that, you know, the constitutionality is really the court's place. Whether you like the court or not is irrelevant. That's their role. And I don't want to overstep that. And I'm not skirting it because of the content of this one, or the initiative process. And it like I said, my role is that, that administrative role of overseeing the, initiative process. And as I look at this one, how can I go to the court? If I could just go to the court and ask them for clarification, that would be easy, but I have to actually sue someone in that process. And if I do that, now it muddies the water for the rest of the process for me to be a fair arbitrator and be that umpire. And again, I go back to what I've heard is that the opponents of this initiative are going to ask the court specifically for relief and clarity, and that I welcome, and I would like the court to weigh in and give direction on that.
Okay, so at this point, you're not accepting them because you're going to wait for that court action.
No, we've accepted because the state statute says I have to.
All right,
state
so these
statute does not give me any leeway on that.
So these are validated.
Not validated. We right now what we're doing is we have accepted the filings. There's over 370,000 roughly signatures that were submitted today. And we will begin the process that we're doing for the other two petitions that we received for two other initiatives. And that process will be happening over the course of the next 3 or 4 weeks. And we will be validating to make sure that the people that signed it are registered voters in Washington State and that they have a sufficient number of signatures on that petition to qualify for the ballot.
Okay.
And in that process, obviously, if the court has any issues that they weigh in on, that's the only thing that would alter that process.
Okay. Well, I'm deeply disappointed. I'm deeply thankful that you chose to explain yourself. I wish you would pray over the weekend about an amicus brief or something else, because it sets a terrible precedent. But the Supreme Court did this to you on purpose. And I've gone long on the show here because this is just so important. But I just want everybody in Olympia to know that there's not a single gun owner who listens to my show who will respect this initiative if it becomes law. Not one. Not a single one of us, because of the way it's been done. But, Kim, that's not your position. God bless you for coming on and telling us your position on this. I deeply appreciate you being willing to do that, Kim. I know it's not easy. And I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you for being that sort of Secretary of State.
Oh, Todd, I really appreciate you having me on your show.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. It's Kim Wyman, Secretary of State of Washington State. Bad news for this state. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show with just a few more things. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. Disagree with the decision Kim Wyman's made? I'm thankful that Kim Wyman explained it to us. We're going to continue to fight. Let's roll into this.
Just a few more things.
Right? We take news like items, we number them, we arrange them, we present them to you in an audio feng shui mode.
Thing one.
So back in Philly, guy walked into the Starbucks and apparently has a stuttering problem. Staff there, one of the staff members, decided to make fun of him. His name is Sam, that's the way he said it, because he stutters. And apparently the employee said, okay, Sam, and then wrote himself a bunch of S's in the guy's cup. Starbucks, of course, has shut down all the stores and hired this guy. To give speeches on diversity and acceptance. Roger Daltrey singing that song and reference at some point that he had a stuttering problem when he was a young man. So Starbucks shutting down the entire, once again, chain of stores to talk about what? They're not? Oh. Wait, I thought when, so they're not shutting down the stores? Well, I know they fired the guy, but that's weird. They're not shutting down the stores. Next up, just a few more things.
Thing two.
Speaking of bullying, CNN decides to bully a woman who has a bunch of kids, happens to be nominated to be in the Supreme Court.
Amy Coney Barrett, the only female nominee Trump seems to be considering, is a former Notre Dame law professor. She is 46 and has 7 children.
I love the emphasis. Emphasis. 7 children! What is she, a mom? Next up, just a few more things.
Thing three.
This guy, Max Boot, is doing what a lot of conservatives are doing. They're going full on, I hate the party, I hate Trump, I'm leaving so they can get themselves on the TV. Here he is arguing with my friend Paris Denard.
He uses dehumanizing terminology to refer to immigrants. It's not just animals.
I think,
he also says they infest and breed. That is the kind of language that ethnic cleansers have used in the past. That is a fact. That is not a falsehood.
That some of the language is tough, and everybody's going to admit that, but it is not near ethnic cleansing. And what they do, these former Republicans, is they do this to get on the TV. Next up, just a few more things.
Thing four.
A woman decided to bully a whole bunch of people trying to go to the Statue of Liberty.
Our beloved First Lady that I care so much about said, when they go low, we go high.
Yeah, yeah. So you went high by sitting on the edge of the Statue of Liberty, blocking about 4,000 people from their holiday. Next up, just a few more things.
Thing five.
No one on Jeopardy can answer a single question about the Mueller investigation.
In 2017, this ex-national security advisor pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. Suzanne.
It was Kelly?
No. Steve. It was Gorka? No. It was Michael Flynn.
Which is a good thing. People aren't paying attention to this show trial. Next up.
Thing six.
Which has John King really worried from CNN.
Only the smartest of the smart get to be on Jeopardy, right? So what does this little exchange last night say about the nation's focus, or lack thereof, on the whole Mueller-Russia meddling and collusion investigation?
It says that people figured out there's nothing there, Johnny. That's what it says. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show with yet more local news. Your response, Kim Wyman.